This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is part two. Q&A with Layla is a segment in which we answer your questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. And we thank you for listening, and we also wanted to remind you that in the new year, these podcasts are a free resource. We're very happy to provide them, but in order to help defray the costs and underwrite this generous project, we hope that you will respond to our invitation to check out the Hoffman Center store at drhoffman.com, and you'll benefit in two ways. You'll continue to hear useful information, hopefully, via these free podcasts and all the other resources that we have on the website at drhoffman.com, and you'll also augment your health with the finest quality supplements at reasonable prices. drhoffman.com is the place to shop for all your supplement needs. And so what's our next question, Layla?
Okay, we've got a question from Jocelyn. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've been having migraines with aura with no headache about once a month for 4 years now. They last about 20 minutes. Anyway, I've had MRIs and EEGs. Everything is normal. I have been on niacin therapy for hyperlipidemia for about 10 years, and it seems that when I go off of it, the migraines start back up again. Could the niacin have made any sort of change in my brain? Am I going through some sort of withdrawal, or is it a coincidence?
It's interesting because niacin is not one of the things that's reputed to help migraines. But maybe it does, because it does have a vasodilating effect, and so that may be part of the reason why it seems to have helped.
Oh, the part that would cause the flushing, which is a is helping with her... keeping
maybe
a migraine away. Wow.
Maybe. You know, it's not known to be. Among the B vitamins that are helpful, it's actually riboflavin.
Riboflavin,
which
that's
is
right.
The vitamin B2, which mm-hmm. is, so we're one mm-hmm. we're one vitamin away
right.
know, from the vitamin that at high doses is supposed to help migraines.
Right. What is the other? Butterbur?
Well, you know, niacin may be a source of a precursor to NADH, which is an energy source, and maybe, just maybe, for this person's unique metabolism, that's helpful. And, you know, maybe we've discovered a new principle, is that this is worth trying in our migraine patients. But I haven't heretofore read of this or experienced it.
Got to look it up.
You know, it'd be worthwhile for her to reinitiate the niacin and see if it... continues to help. You know, this thing about niacin is that it's really recently fallen in somewhat into disfavor, because while it does lower cholesterol, it's not entirely clear that that lowering of the cholesterol is commensurate with protection.
Mm.
In other words, when statins lower cholesterol, they also have a secondary action as natural anti-inflammatories.
Yeah.
And so it's not entirely clear that things that lower cholesterol always end up reducing cardiovascular risk.
Right.
So that's why niacin is falling a little bit by the wayside.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And part of it is the result of the effort to commercialize niacin, where they did a trial. They paired niacin with a prostaglandin modifier, which was an expensive add-on to the niacin, which is supposed to make it flush-free, and it actually somewhat increase the risk of heart problems.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they said, well, that must be the niacin. Well, it wasn't necessarily the niacin. It may have been the thing they teamed the niacin with.
You know, the other thing that can help with the flush is to take quercetin approximately a half hour before taking the niacin.
Or aspirin.
Or aspirin.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Jocelyn, thank you for that bit of information. You should probably restart your niacin.
Then the question, I mean, a whole other question is whether she really needs to lower her cholesterol, because often people are told they need to lower their cholesterol, and they don't really need to lower their cholesterol.
That's true. We see so many with high, even cholesterol in the 300s, but you send them then for an EBT heart scan, and some of them come back with zero calcium scores.
Yeah.
So it's not all about the cholesterol.
Yeah, we have a little dilemma with a patient. We saw a chart on yesterday, I think it was the day before, cholesterol 379, but HDL, I think it was like 110.
Yeah.
And the amount of oxidized LDL was pretty good, mm-hmm. and the ratio of oxidized LDL to HDL was good. And that's a patient we'll probably want to send for an EBT scan.
Yeah.
But there's a fair chance that even with this astronomical cholesterol, she won't have a lot of plaque.
Right. If her oxidized LDL is low,
yeah.
which was probably a bigger risk factor for plaque,
yep.
and she's got such a high HDL,
yes.
the so-called garbage truck.
Yeah, the protective factor, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Okay. We have a question from Ruth. Dr. Hoffman, I'm a frequent listener of your program. I noticed that you might have some supplements and information about mitral valve prolapse. I have regurgitation from the bicuspid valve, and I'm curious whether there's any supplement that could decrease fluid. The doctor was possibly prescribing colchicine.
Colchicine? That sounds really weird. Colchicine?
Is that for gout?
Yeah. I'm not sure why colchicine would be
for
used at all for
fluid?
That. Plus, colchicine has a side effect of, if taken orally, it causes terrible diarrhea. It's a gout drug. Are we sure it's colchicine? I wonder.
Hmm. Yeah, Ruth, we wonder if it's colchicine. But anyway, mitral valve prolapse. And she's interested in then in decreasing fluid because
okay,
of her bicuspid valve?
If you have fluid accumulation because of a faulty valve, you know, some of that's mechanical and the valve is not really closing. What you can do is you can take high doses of ubiquinol, you know, maybe 300 to you know, as much as 500 a day.
Of ubiquinol, not necessarily CoQ10.
Right, because you need a fairly high dose to see, you know, that's, it sounds like there's a mild degree of congestive heart failure there if there's fluid accumulation. And therefore, the coenzyme Q10 can help with pumping action of the heart. It actually helps what's called diastole, which is the part of the heartbeat where...
It's not diastole.
It's diastole.
Diastole.
It's uh-huh. it's written diastole,
mm-hmm.
but it's diastole. There's systole and diastole. Well, it's like why you go to med school. Right? When you read it, it seems to be pronounced the way you said it. But in diastole, that's the relaxation phase of the heart. And that actually, the heart becomes stiff sometimes with aging and degenerative change. And ubiquinol appears to forestall that. So that could be a partial help. You know, our patients have mitral valve prolapse and they have a lot of symptoms. We give them magnesium. We give them, we make sure that they have, in some cases, carnitine, ribose.
Mm-hmm.
These are some of the things that are helpful.
Mm-hmm. With mitral valve prolapse, it's also important that you don't suffer from unstable blood sugar or hypoglycemia. That could set you up for being symptomatic.
Right, right. I've written a whole book on the subject of mitral valve prolapse, which actually, among all the books I've written, it seems to be one of the most popular. It's just a little booklet that I wrote pretty near 20 years ago, and it stood the test of time, and it still gets accolades, and I still get royalty payments on it.
That's
I
great.
Think I got like I think I got about $35. The other day, a check.
Okay.
It's like, you know, we sold another, you know, 120 copies. So.
There you go. No, it's a great little book, and it's very, very helpful to a lot of people. So people don't know about magnesium. I'm still surprised at how many people don't know about magnesium and mitral valve prolapse.
Right.
That could almost be the answer.
Right. It's even thought that the mitral valve prolapse worsens if you don't have adequate magnesium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, Ruth, thank you very, very much for your question. All right. What would you say about things like taurine for decreasing fluid or B6? Is that even helpful?
I don't think they're that strong, you know, that they're natural diuretics. I haven't really found a natural diuretic that I like that much. Mm-hmm. The one that does seem to work a bit, strangely, is there's a product I used to recommend for people they want a natural diuretic. It does seem to make people urinate and lose fluid. It's called PMST. I think it's made by traditional medicinals or maybe Celestial Seasonings, one of those tea companies. You get it at a health food store.
Oh, wow.
And it seems to have a little bit of a natural diuretic effect.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Yeah. I'm not even exactly sure what's in it. It's pretty benign, mm-hmm. over-the-counter thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't know what a guy's going to do with that. You know. By the way,
Loaded. Take some PMST.
No, you know something? They now think that men also have something that's like that. It's like... a male version of PMS, that testosterone fluctuates, mm-hmm. you know, through this. There's like a biorhythm of testosterone.
So they
and
get
when a guy
cranky?
Cranky. It's like his testosterone is too high, it's too low. It's like it's all over the place. So it's a male PMS.
That's interesting.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Well, you're married, you know, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Our next question is from Ben. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I recently read an article that claims olive oil causes a, quote, constant and significant decrease in endothelial function after meals.
Wow. End that quote. That is so the opposite of what it seems, what the research
yeah.
states. I think what it...
Do you have any pushback on this?
Well, I would love to... You know, when people say stuff like that, they mm-hmm. really need to give me a reference.
Yes.
Like, give me
yes.
a URL, a link,
absolutely.
A reference... Because mm-hmm. I think that it's actually the opposite, is that many well-designed studies have shown that blood flow improves with olive oil. Especially rich, polyphenol-rich olive oil
yeah.
that has a lot of oleuropein in it, which is a real circulatory enhancer and protects the endothelium
yeah.
and relaxes the endothelium.
Yeah. I have to question if this is due because of some scientific research. I wonder about the quality of olive oil that was used in this study.
60 Minutes just
did it. It's like using the wrong vitamin E.
Yeah. No, 60 Minutes just did a big expose on this. And mm-hmm. what they basically were saying is that the mafia controls the olive oil industry and that they adulterate like crazy. And they estimate that as much as 80% of the olive oil in America is adulterated. It's mixed with cheaper oils like canola oil.
Sunflower, I heard, is a big one for... Yeah.
And here's
olive oil fraud.
And Americans are perfect for this because Americans have a very jaded palate. And we don't, a lot of Americans, given real olive oil, they go, that's too strong. They want light olive oil. And light olive oil is worthless because it doesn't have any flavor, hence it doesn't have any phytonutrients in it. It doesn't have the...
Another reason never to use light olive oil is to lighten it. They have to bleach it, and they have to deodorize it so it's not so pungent. We should not be consuming things that have been processed this way.
And some people use that for cooking. They don't want it to impart such a strong flavor. Mm. Well, fine. Then
use motor oil. I'm
sorry. Yeah, right. use coconut oil. Use coconut oil or use ghee when you're cooking.
Right.
You know, those are probably the best cooking oils. And I have to tell you, and I don't know, some people may be shocked by this. You ready, folks? Are you sitting down? Because I'm going to make a very, very shocking declaration here, is that I use chemical-free, not nitrite-free bacon. And when I make the bacon, I don't throw out the grease. I put it in a little ramekin. I keep the grease, and I use it as when I'm making eggs or something. I'll use that to grease the pan. Cast iron pan.
Yeah.
You lubricate it with a little bit of lard.
Yes.
But guess what? It's not. It's natural bacon, so it's not chemicalized.
Right.
And people used to eat lard.
Yeah.
You know, my ancestors, who probably kept kosher, instead of lard, they used schmaltz, which is the Yiddish word for chicken fat. They used very carefully save it. They would skim it off the top of, when they were rendering down bones in an old carcass, they would use the broth. And then they would carefully skim off the schmaltz, because that was their cooking oil.
We always save the bacon fat for cooking. It's more flavorful for food.
You
it's
too?
All of that. Yes, we do. My husband got me into that, as a matter of fact. He was a former chef. So bacon fat is always good in his estimation. The other thing about lard that a lot of people don't know, and I still remember this as an undergrad being completely shocked when we got to Chapter 3 of Nutrition 101, Fats.
Right.
That lard is about 48% omega-9. It's 48% monounsaturated.
Yes. Well, here's another interesting thing on lard. How do we get off on this tangent?
Olive oil.
We're talking
causing endothelial.
All right, well, let's riff on this for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that it's an interesting thing that pigs now are raised indoors in these giant sheds, right, under mm-hmm. the most probably oppressive conditions, and they probably never get out in the sunlight. But in the olden days, one of the major sources of vitamin D in the diet was from lard. Why? Because pigs tan. They actually have the ability to take vitamin D, ultraviolet light, and convert it into subcutaneous vitamin D, and their lard actually has a fairly substantial amount of vitamin D, but only...
Because it gets sequestered in the fat.
Yeah, but only if they are sun exposed. So in order to replicate this, you'd have to have your own live pig in your garden and feed it table scraps.
Jasper.
Right. And then, unfortunately, slaughter him yourself and then, you know, make bacon.
Right.
Right.
I just had a visual of a pig sporting sunglasses and a big hat, and that was... They tan. That's fascinating.
That's the Geico commercial,
that's even
isn't
funny,
it?
Is it?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Anyhow, that's fascinating. Anyway, you want to source your pork. You know, you want good quality, naturally. Natural doesn't mean anything in the food industry anymore. Free range, all that, because factory farmed hogs are fed terrible things like cooked garbage and who knows what, and that's not what you want.
Right.
So,
and there are a few reputable companies doing this.
Yeah. So the whole olive oil claim, getting back to that, it has to be reputable. Don't you belong to an olive oil club?
I do, the Olive Oil of the Month Club. And you put me a little on the spot here because I would like to give people a link, which I'll remind me to do it next time.
Next time,
and,
yes.
You know, it's a very nice club. It's a little pricey. But, you know, just as some people belong to the Wine of the Month Club,
yeah, or
it's
the
really
fruit
delightful
of the
because you get,
yeah.
like, Australian olive oil. Like, who'd have thunk, but this guy is called the Olive Oil Hunter, and I've interviewed him for my podcast. Some people uh-huh. may remember this. He goes all over the world in search of the best quality olive oil. So, and it varies from year to year. Sometimes there's a terrible harvest in Europe. So mm-hmm. he'll have to go elsewhere. He'll have to go to North Africa or have to go to Sicily or something. Sicily, part of Europe, but it's sort of in the middle of the Mediterranean. Or... You know, he'll source... California actually has some very fine olive oil mm-hmm. now, but mm-hmm. it's very pricey. It's very gourmet.
Yeah.
But, you know, the basic thing is if you get, like, a big old honking bottle of olive oil for, like, $8, that ain't olive oil.
Right.
It just ain't olive oil.
It's not.
You know, it's don't look for bargains.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got to be aromatic. It's got to have a little bit of green tinge, and you have to have a palate that can mm-hmm. taste it.
It's got to be
and
fruity.
And Americans don't know.
They don't know.
A little spicy, even a little piquant, like a little, you know, that's real olive oil.
Yeah. And anything that smells remotely rancid or wrong or anything, you should dispose of.
I put out to somebody, I have an inquiry out to someone who's written an olive oil book. Well, I'll get him on the podcast.
Great. Look forward to that. Ben, thank you very much for your question. Okay.
We have time for one. Is there a quick one?
Maybe. This comes from Michael. Let's see. Hello. Are there any supplements that would be helpful for someone with myasthenia gravis? I was just diagnosed and is affecting one eyelid only.
Okay. Well, myasthenia gravis involves defects in acetylcholine. It's an autoimmune disease in which the receptors for acetylcholine are damaged,
mm-hmm.
and so you need things to augment acetylcholine. So there are medications that are used for that, and theoretically one can augment acetylcholine by taking choline, you know, phosphatidylcholine.
Yeah.
That might be a substrate for that. But the other consideration is, since it's an autoimmune disorder, you may want to investigate something like a paleo diet.
Yes.
Higher amounts of omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D. These are things that are known to suppress autoimmunity.
Yeah, yeah. Possible removal of nightshades.
You know, myasthenia gravis is such an autoimmune disorder that one of the treatments for myasthenia gravis mm-hmm. is to remove the thymus gland. It's to actually take out
oh my goodness.
The very gland that is responsible for T cells in the body.
Mm-hmm.
I
was just tapping on my thymus
tapping on the thymus.
It might come out as noise.
That's where your microphone is,
right?
Isn't it? Right.
Oops.
Okay. This is actually something that was encouraged by some people who were a little bit, I think, speculative,
mm-hmm.
that if you thump your thymus,
mm-hmm.
you can probably pick that up on the recording here. I'm thumping my thymus, which is near my microphone, this will enhance your immunity. I'm not sure if that's really the case.
That's where the T cells go to mature.
Right.
So it's like you're shaking it up a little bit.
The interesting thing about the thymus is that, while we're off on the tangent, is that the thymus is a very big organ. It's almost fist-sized in a baby. It occupies a considerable part of the middle of the chest, right under the sternum, the breastbone.
Mm-hmm.
In older adults, it's almost... you almost can't find it. And
it shrinks.
I remember dissecting my first cadaver.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they give you... You get what you get. You know, you draw lots and you get cadavers. And you're lucky to get a cadaver because it's a very big thing to people donating their body to science.
Yeah.
And I remember in the dissection room... Other people got these very big, robust young men with perfect musculature and, you know, young appearing and very, normal organs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I got, an 85-year-old woman where she's very fragile and very small. I remember to this day, this is over 30 years ago, and I was very curious to see if we would be able to find her thymus. We couldn't find her thymus. It was maybe a very thin band of tissue that had just shrunk down. Another thing, which is part of senescence, is that as you age, your immune system actually declines in its robust response to infections and cancer as well.
Right, right, right. Interesting. Wow.
But then there's this aspect of overactive immunity, which has to be suppressed.
What kind of supplements besides choline? You think something like Modicare?
I'm not even sure. I think it's one of those conditions where maybe 10% there's a nutritional correlate to it.
Yeah,
it's not bad to get on a healthy protocol,
right?
And to see if you can reduce your requirement for medication.
Sure.
And the problem with myasthenia gravis is that certain forms of it are very cause a severe paralysis. Mostly, as in this patient, you just get a little bit of lid droop, eye droop, and it's very easily treatable, with a little bit of medication.
Okay. Best of luck, Michael. Thank you for your question.
So that's all the time that we have for today's edition of Intelligent Medicine. And we want to remind you also that Leila Mudin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She and I see patients at the Hoffman Center. And one of the routes by which you can access the expertise that we share with you each week on our podcasts is to see her independently, not become a medical patient at the Hoffman Center. Of course, you're welcome to do that and see me. But if you want to enter the system and have a consultation with Leila, you can do so. And the good news is that she also handles patients at a distance, whereas I require a physical exam and an initial intake. So if you have a doctor and you have medical tests and you have a problem that you want to share with Leila, we invite you to call the Hoffman Center, get information at drhoffman.com, and learn how you can become a patient of a very expert nutritionist whose knowledge is extensive in dealing with a wide variety of problems. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.